What is up, guys? Today, we are super excited for this episode. We actually have on Connor Cook, who is a financial advisor located in Gilbert, Arizona. Now, Connor, a little bit about him. He has his bachelor's in business finance from BYU, Idaho. He has his Series 65 license, along with several other licenses that allows him to give financial advice. He actually works for the Cook Financial Group, which is a family-owned business, which is super awesome. One of the really cool things about them is they do free consultations. So if you guys want to learn more, you guys can actually reach out to Connor directly and have a little appointment with him. You can contact him on LinkedIn with his name, C-O-N-N-O-R Cook, Connor Cook. You can even text him at 480-823-5030 or email him at Connor@CookFinancialGroupAZ.com. Definitely reach out to him. Don't have to be in person. You actually do those meetings virtual as well if you want to. I definitely recommend that.
Yeah, for sure. And in this episode, we're just going to pretend to be a young couple looking for financial advice. And Connor will kind of go through what he might go through with you if you were to reach out to him and do one of those consultations. So super helpful if you're just kind of wanting to be a fly on the wall and listen in. Some of the topics that we do talk about are investing, credit cards, managing debt, budgeting and saving money, just things that are really helpful and really important for you to know, especially once you get married and you realize like, man, we got to learn how to navigate all this money stuff. So exactly. Super helpful episode. I think it'll be beneficial for a lot of you.
Yeah, this is a perfect episode to just kind of get your financial foundation set up. And one of the most important parts, guys, about like financial independence and stability is having a great job that you actually enjoy and that pays you what you're worth. A couple of years ago, I was working at a job that I didn't necessarily love. Like it paid pretty well, but I didn't love the work, didn't love the hours. And so about 2 years ago, I made a change to get into door-to-door sales. That's been a huge blessing for our family.
Yeah.
The biggest thing is that Allie and I were able to make more money in just one summer than we actually were making the full year doing a full-time work. And so it saved us a ton of time. We've been able to use that time to focus on school, focus on our family, our new baby girl, making these podcast episodes, all the other like endeavors, you know, traveling, different things like that. It's given us so much more free time and it's been a huge blessing for us, guys. So if you're in a similar situation where you just want to get ahead in life, or maybe you're just don't love your job or you're not getting paid enough, think about sales. Obviously, sales isn't for everybody. It is tough, but it is honestly a great opportunity if you can hang with it. And so if you guys have any questions, reach out to me. My phone number is 801-635-6476. It could honestly be a great thing for you. So see if it'll be a good fit.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Well, we hope you guys enjoy this episode and we'll see you in there.
See you guys. Welcome to the Marriage Prep Podcast. I'm Nathan Hooper.
And I'm Allie Hooper. In this podcast, we will give you all the resources that you need to go from dating or engaged to creating a lasting marriage that will bring you more happiness than you ever thought possible.
Here, we're going to interview experts and discuss important topics like how to know if your partner is right for you. We will provide you guys a list of questions and conversations that you need to be having to make sure you're both ready for marriage and on the same page.
We will even dive deep into topics like sexual intimacy, finances, how to have a fair fight, and a whole lot more to make sure you can step up to that altar with complete confidence.
So subscribe now and make sure you guys don't miss any episodes, and we'll see you in there. What is up, guys? We are so excited to have Connor Cook here with us. Connor is a financial advisor and he's someone that we kind of worked with in the past as well. Just a super awesome guy. And we're super excited to have him on here. Welcome, Connor.
Thank you. Thank you. Glad to be here.
Yeah. So to kind of kick things off, Connor, we want to have you just introduce ourselves. We know that you recently got married, but you've also been working as a financial advisor. So we want to hear from you. How long have you been married for? Well, how long have you been a financial advisor for? What made you try to get in that path? How's everything been going for you? And just kind of introduce yourself to us.
Sure. Yeah. I've been married to the beautiful Kemily Cook for 2.5 months now.
Wow.
It's been a lot better. I was just telling these guys, it's been a lot better than being engaged. We're having a lot of fun. It's been great. As far as a financial advisor, I've been a financial advisor for about a year now, but it feels like a lot longer. My dad is a financial advisor and has been for over 25 years. So growing up with him was, you know, get my daily dose of financial wisdom. So
nice.
Yeah, about a year professionally though.
That's awesome. Well, I want to kind of jump out to you, Connor, because it kind of prompted me with your dad being a financial advisor. Did your dad do anything specific raising you that was like interesting to kind of like put you on a path of like financial like wisdom and like
making how good, did he help you growing up with that?
Yeah. Really good question. I think that hard work is often talked about, like, oh, my parents taught me how to work hard. My parents taught me the value of a dollar. But truly, that's probably the best lesson I ever learned from them, was that if I wanted something, I had to go work for it. And then it wasn't, he kind of helped me understand, like, hey, if you want to spend your money, you know, make sure it's worth it. There's a value in what you just did. Like, think of how hard that was to just earn that money. What do you want to do with that? And so I grew up kind of being, actually, I just talked to him like 2 minutes ago before we jumped on here. And we were talking about an expense that's coming up. And he's like, I just wanted to prepare you because I know you're a tightwad. And I really am. I'm a tightwad now. And I like want my money to go to investing. I want my money to go to places where it works for me. So number one was the hard work and value of the dollar. But the second thing was to pay yourself first. I heard that growing up all the time. My grandpa as well was a financial advisor.
Wow.
And my great grandpa as well, he was more of an insurance agent, but they always talked about paying yourself first. And so that could mean putting your money into savings. That could mean putting your money towards something that is actually important, investments, different types of insurances, that kind of thing. And so I've always tried to pay myself a little something, put money from my spending pocket and into my savings pocket, that kind of thing.
That's cool. I can already tell you're very wise with your money. That's super cool. I'm excited to hear more.
I try to.
Yeah, no, yeah. That's awesome. Well, we kind of want to provide some guidance for this episode. We want to kind of take it as if Allie and I are just meeting with Connor for the first time. We've been married for about a month or so. We're a brand new, newlywed couple. We want to just come to a financial advisor and get some advice for our relationship financially. And we also want to have Connor talk about his experience so far with his marriage, just being 2 to 3 months in, how that's been for him financially. So we'll kind of kick it off, Connor, as if Allie and I are just coming into your office. You know, we've been married for about a month and we're just saying, hey,
we have no clue what we're doing.
We don't know what we're doing. We're just saying, hey, help us. You know all this stuff, like, help us out. How would you go from there?
I deal with this situation all the time. Most of my clients are young. In terms of how I would deal with this, I think that there's definitely things, and Nathan, I think that we've talked in the past, and maybe I went over these things with you, but there's a few different things that I like to talk about with especially young couples. And I tailor it to young couples because I have clients who are in their 60s. I have clients who are in their 50s and a few in their 40s and 30s and whatnot. And a lot of them have said, I wish I would have known X, Y, or Z. I wish I would have done this earlier, or I just didn't have someone to tell me this kind of thing. And so I've tailored the things I like to talk about with young couples to the mistakes that I see in older couples and older clients. Not to say that they're not on track or they didn't do everything right. Some of them will admit to you that they really didn't. They were negligible. So in terms of how I'm going to handle this, I like to use experience from people that have been around a lot longer than me on what works and what doesn't, right? So let me ask this though. Are we approaching this are we kind of role playing this, or am I?
Yeah, we can let's role. I mean, what are some like the biggest mistakes you notice in those older couples that you would want to like tell these younger couples or tell us?
Yeah. Yeah. The first things that when someone gets married, the number one thing that people underestimate is how much you need in savings and budgeting. Those are the two main things that I like to go over with people. In fact, I like talking about budgeting almost more than I like talking about investing. It's super important, and I'll kind of get to that. But what I like to do is we call it a financial dream house. And I remember I told somebody that one time. I said, yeah, I want to help you what we call a financial dream house. And they're like, wait, so you're going to sell us a house? Like, no. We're not building anything. It's just hypothetical type stuff. So anyway, we start with the most important thing, which is going to be the foundation of the house, right? It can't live without a foundation. If it's cracked, if it's slanted, if it's not built correctly, it's not a house I want to live in, right?
Right.
So normally I like to get an idea of what you have done to, or what you understand, or what you know of, or what you feel is important to have in a financial foundation. Or I guess, what would you guys say is important in your foundation?
Yeah.
It's a good question. It's just hypothetical here. Let's say I think that it's important to, you know, have a good chunk of savings so that if anything goes wrong, like if Nathan and I are not able to work, that we can like survive for a few months. I think that's important.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Nathan, what would you add?
Yeah, I think savings is huge. I'd say budgeting, like knowing where your money is going, and then having a source of income, obviously, is another huge
part. Making sure, making money.
Making sure you're making money.
Having money to do something with. Yeah.
Absolutely. Definitely. Those are three huge ones. Definitely key building blocks. So like you mentioned, Ali, 3 to 6 months of expenses will mainly be what we will want for emergency reserves. You nailed it. If you and Nathan couldn't work, something happened, even the coronavirus, you know, maybe it really shuts down and we can't work again or whatever, this whole variant, hopefully nothing big happens, right? But who knows? We want 3 to 6 months in the bank. And the 3 to 6 months depends on your comfort level and maybe how you live your life. I like to have 6 in the bank because I have a business. And so I have business expenses. I have things I need to take care of. And I was just telling you both that business is really great some months, and then some months it's not, and you work 2 weeks for free. And so I like knowing that if something bad happened or it got real slow, I've got at least 6 months to be okay. So that's a huge one. The next one that Nathan, you mentioned, was budgeting. Budgeting is, I've come to realize how important budgeting is. And oftentimes when I meet with young couples who have just been married, I sometimes will ask them to come prepared with a couple of different expenses that they project they'll have, and we'll go through them together. And normally, and unfortunately, it's way off. They've just never had to do this together, and it's totally okay. I mean, they just have never had to figure out what's it going to be like to eat for two? What's it going to be like to have this kind of insurance? And what are the other things we're going to have to pay? You're just kind of used to, all right, well, I've got enough money to get through. And so tracking expenses and figuring that out is something I really enjoy doing with people, and I'll kind of give them an idea. And oftentimes it's the bad news of, hey, this is actually going to be a lot more than we thought. But
I have a question for you really quick.
Yeah.
And maybe you're planning on talking about this, but in terms of budgeting and tracking your expenses, do you have anything you recommend, like a certain app, or do you like what's the process like for that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's the next thing. That's the biggest part of the entire discussion that I like to talk about, is how to actually budget. And so there's a difference, in my opinion, of tracking expenses and budgeting. Tracking your expenses is just looking at your statements and your bank. Like my bank will show me how much I've spent in different categories. Well, that's great, but that's not active. That's just a past performance. You're just looking at it from a past perspective. Okay, well, I spent that much money. And then it's having to think, well, and then it becomes extremely difficult, and it takes a lot of emotional fortitude, as well as, what's the word I'm looking for, dedication, to then follow the budget, in quotes, that you've created. Because you look at your expenses, and let's say, for example, I had a client who would eat out all the time. He was eating out, you know, once a day because he didn't pack his lunch or whatever. And he was spending 100 plus on eating out. And so we decided, hey, this budget's going to be $80 that you can eat out per week. That's a pretty good eating out budget, in my opinion, that you're eating pretty large, you know? And so we decided that was going to be it. Well, it didn't work because he was tracking expenses and we didn't get down to the budgeting part. So what I mean is, he would look and he would see, all right, I've already spent $80. And then he would forget about that and continue to spend money on eating out. Budgeting means that we look at the certain app or the certain tool that we're using, and we see, okay, I spent X amount. I can't spend any more. Or if I do, it needs to come from somewhere else. Mm-hmm. It needs to come from a different category. So I'll get into that in just a second. The thing that I often recommend is Mint is good. It's free. I think a lot of BYUI students use Mint. It's highly recommended over there. I used it for a little while. It's good for tracking expenses. It's decent, but I would use Why You Need a Budget. It's an app called Why You Need a Budget. It's YNAB. The letters YNAB. You can look that up. And it's, I believe, $80 for a year or something like that. So break that down, $6 per month, something like that.
Okay.
Anyway, it's good. I really, really like it because it teaches a really neat principle of budgeting to zero. And budgeting to zero basically means this. every dollar's got a job. And that doesn't mean that every dollar has to go towards something specific like bills and whatnot. It has to be used for, everything has to go into savings or whatever. But you give every dollar a job, have fun money, eating out, that kind of thing. And everything left over can go towards something cool. It can go towards saving for a trip. It can go towards investing. It can go towards, which I would encourage investing in savings first. Those types of things. But every dollar's got to have a job. Otherwise, that money's gone.
Right. That you're going to use it somehow.
Yeah. Money gets spent. Money definitely gets spent. It doesn't matter how much of a tightwad or tight-fisted you are. But money's going to get spent somehow. You'll come to a boiling edge at some point. So having that of going to, every dollar's got a job, budget to zero, that kind of thing.
I love that.
Is a huge deal. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's huge because a lot of times, like even Allie and I, like we try to have like our budget and like our financial talks and stuff, but sometimes we'll be at like the end of the month, we're like, where did our money go? Like we just aren't as good.
How did we spend this
much? How did, like, we're like looking through. It's so important if you like are able to use that app, YNAB, and like making sure that every dollar does have a job and that you know where your money is being spent, then you can kind of track it and you can make sure you're like you said, not just like looking at the past, but you're actually planning for the future.
Oh, yeah.
You're making things happen. But I love that. And I want to kind of ask you too, Connor, do you feel like the emergency reserve, like the 6 months of 3 to 6 months of expenses, is the first thing that these couples should be like saving up for? That should be like their first like financial savings goal?
Yes. 100% yes. Even if it never gets used, it's there. Too many times, I can't remember what the stat is, but almost every married couple in the US, I shouldn't say that. I would say there's a large amount of married couples in the US that don't have, they barely have like $2,000 to their name. 100%, 3 to 6 months of emergency reserves is extremely important. I would do that before you invest. I would do that before you do anything else, is build up that
reserves.
And even let's say you're planning on buying a house, you don't touch that when you're like, you don't put that towards a house, you don't put that towards anything. That's like just liquid at any point in time.
Exactly. I love the word you used. It's liquid. Yeah. That's in case everything goes bad with that. The house doesn't matter if you can't, for some reason, make the payment someday, right? You could buy this house and then all of a sudden you've got your mortgage payment coming in. Well, there's no money in the bank because we lost our job or something happened, something bad. You know, we got disabled. We lost this spot. Whatever it is, we need to make sure we got money in the bank.
Yeah. I love that. And this might be getting into a little bit into the weeds here, but do you have a specific like type of account that you like to recommend for those people for their emergency fund? Like, is there something specific or just kind of any bank savings account?
Yeah, great question. I think here's the thing that I'll say on savings and budgeting. The thing that I've learned is do whatever works for you. Whatever you're going to do, do that. Because let me take a step back and then I'll repeat and answer the question. Is a lot of times people will try to do a budget on Excel. Well, I'm personally not going to go in Excel every week or once a day and update that. That's not going to work for me. I'm not going to write things out on paper. That's too confusing. I will do an app. I will do a certain kind of app. I have some clients, they sit down every week and they'll do a journal in their budgeting app. They'll journal their expenses and figure out their budget. Wow. That's just the way they do it. So what I'm saying is with this savings account, do whatever's going to work for you. I don't think it's very effective to have all of your money in one or two bank accounts. I think that there should be another account that you put your 3 to 6 months in. That's the most success that I've seen. But do whatever works for you.
Is that because you think it's less tempting? Like it's just in its own set aside account? Is that why you think separate it?
Yes, 100%. That's why. It's because it's like out of sight, out of mind, especially once you've hit your target and you're not even contributing to it anymore. It's like that money doesn't exist until I need it. That money's not real until it becomes real.
Yeah. Right.
I think that's huge.
Yeah.
Are there like some interest bearing accounts that you'll usually like recommend to people, or have you found any tools or any like specific accounts? You're like, oh yeah, they make great interest. People can make a little bit of interest on that. Emergency fund, are you not too worried about that?
A high yield savings account is probably the best you're going to get. Right now, high yields are not doing anything.
Yeah.
Interest rates are just crazy low. So, when interest rates do pop back up, that's going to be the place to go. I would recommend it either way. I know like maybe Betterment has a good one. There's a few places that have, the names are escaping me, but there's a few that have some good high interest
Okay.
Cool. Yeah. That's awesome.
So just to repeat what we've talked about so far, it's super important that we have that emergency saving fund and we just set that aside. We don't touch it. That's the first thing that we're going to do. And probably the best way to get there is budgeting. We're going to budget our money and we're going to figure out, give every dollar a job and make sure that like any excess money is going to that emergency fund. So once we've got that emergency savings set aside and we've maybe established a good pattern of budgeting, what's next? Like what comes next for a couple?
Yeah, the way you laid that out was perfect. There's a couple other things that I would say go in conjunction with the 3 to 6 months, making that your target savings goal, making sure we got a budget in play. The third thing I would say is a debt elimination plan / establishing credit. Mm. And also, you actually did mention having an income, having a job. We need that. I would say if you're unsatisfied with the way that you're getting paid right now, just start looking. Just start looking for another job, something that pays more. There are plenty, especially right now. We as the employer, or excuse me, the employee, you've got a lot more leverage than we used to right now. People are getting paid a lot of money because of work shortages. Anyway, so that's one. Next one, debt elimination credit. Debt elimination, also debt avoidance if we can. There's good debt and there's stupid debt. You don't need the best car in the world. We all know that. We can live frugally. We can live modestly within or below, especially below our means, making sure we're taking on appropriate debt. But once we do, we want to just choose the debt that has the lowest balance but the highest interest rate and attack that one as much as we can. Mm. Once that's done, move on to the next one and the next one and the next one. So it's a snowball effect. And that establishing credit, I know a lot of people out there might listen to Dave Ramsey. I think Dave Ramsey has great stuff, but he hates credit cards. You kind of need credit these days. So just be very disciplined and only use your credit card for maybe groceries or gas if you're really worried about it, that kind of stuff. Establish something, some kind of revolving credit.
I like that.
The next things to answer again your question, Ali, is in conjunction with these 3 to 6 months of expenses saved up, budgeting, debt elimination, finding a good job are going to be the funnest things in the world, which is insurance. Everybody loves insurance. Yeah, insurance is my least favorite thing in the world to pay, but it's also the thing that helps me sleep a little bit better at night. Auto, my personal least favorite to pay, but very, very important. Hopefully nobody's driving around illegally out there. Find a good broker, find better rates, shop it often. That's one that you can shop all the time. Shop it often.
Okay.
Then there's a life insurance. Life insurance gets swept under the rug all the time. For young married couples, I would say it depends on the person, the personalities and everything, but I would say consider it seriously. Mm. And then there's health insurance. Obviously, we need health insurance. If you're not on a family plan, normally when we're young, we can keep on our family plan till we're about 26. If we're not, we just need to find something. And there's some really great solutions out there that could potentially cost you $0 a month. And will provide you some type of coverage that if you were to be in an accident or your health declined dramatically, you wouldn't be paying off thousands and tens of thousands of dollars in medical bills, right? Okay. So that's the base of what I would say. Work on these things in conjunction. Yeah. Find good deals. Find the right things for you.
Cool. I have a couple of questions. So I want to first going back to like the debt and credit side of things. Do you feel like should couples, like if a couple has a decent amount of like student loans, or they have a car loan, or maybe they have some other debt, and then they also don't have an emergency fund, do you feel like they need to go after their debt first and then fund the emergency fund, or do them both together at the same time, just do like half-half? Or how should that be played out for a couple if they're in that situation where they have some debt, and then should they be focusing that first and then the emergency fund, or do kind of both together?
Great question. Super great question. I would say always place a priority on the emergency fund. We always want the priority be there because, again, going back to our example of maybe the down payment, like if there's no money in the bank and something happens, then we can't pay the bill and then we default and things get worse and worse and worse. So I would say to split it up and continue to fund your emergency fund, make maybe minimum payments or whatever on your debt. But if you're really trying to fund that emergency fund quickly, which I would, and then throw everything else into the debt. Your payment that you were paying yourself to the emergency fund. Mm-hmm. Now use that to pay off your debt. Just transfer money over to that once you've accomplished that first goal. I'd do it together, but we focus on
emergency. And then I want to hit on credit too, because I know at least I kind of grew up, you know, reading Dave Ramsey, listening to him, and just credit cards, like no, like, and then I had kind of had to have that paradigm shift that you do need credit to be able to buy a house.
Do you ever want a house? Yeah.
And so what's kind of your advice with credit? Obviously you just have to kind of start small if you're not comfortable with this or with your groceries, but do you have any specific advice when it comes to credit, maybe specific credit cards for people to maybe look into or anything like that when it comes to like kind of the more specifics with credit?
I've had a lot of people ask me a similar question of which credit cards are best. And you just kind of have to figure out what's important to you guys, because there's some great benefits to credit, you know, cash back, miles, that kind of thing. Figure out what you guys like to do, and then it becomes fun. And the other thing I would say is, like you'd said, Nathan, grew up with the old Dave Ramsey, cut your credit cards. And I grew up maybe in a similar way of just being very cautious of credit. Approach it with a promise in mind. Approach it with a discipline factor that I am not going to spend money on X, Y, or Z thing. And when I do use my credit card, I'm checking my bank before I do this, and it becomes a habit. That way you can really trust yourself with your credit card. I think a lot of people just don't trust themselves.
Yeah.
I've dealt with a lot of credit card debt, clients who have a lot of credit card debt, and it mainly came from, I think that we could finance this and I think that would be okay. And then when it came down to maybe big expenses, like maybe medical expenses, even then they had to finance those things. And so now it's on top of all these different bills. Now they've financed some really important stuff that should have been financed, but they had leisure stuff on their credit card as well. So the other thing I would say, and I'm sorry, I'm kind of rambling a little bit. Ideas. The other thing I would say is there are credit cards with high interest. As much as you can, avoid them. I mean, it's just not to your favor, obviously, but just try your best to avoid those high interest credit cards, because at some point you could get yourself in a little bit of a trap. I've dealt with a few clients who are paying off student loans on credit cards, and maybe that was what they had to do, but gosh, the interest is so dang high. It's ridiculous, you know? So yeah, approaching it with caution, I guess, is what I'm repeating over and over again. Yeah.
No, I like that. I would say Allie and I kind of use our credit cards like as if they're debit cards. Like we know we have the money and we spend it because we get the rewards and we get the cash back, but we also are able to pay it off every month and keep our credit high. So I think if you do, like you said, Connor, use it responsibly and you know you have the money, you're not overextending yourself, you're not going into debt, then there's no harm in doing it. But as long as you're, like you said, as long as you're cautious with it and you know kind of you're being responsible with your credit card spending, I think there's no problem and it's a good thing to do.
Yeah, I would even argue like it's better. Like it's, I would say like hold off on even going to school if it means you're going to have to go into like huge debt and then use a credit card. You know what I mean? Just like avoid it at all costs and like be patient. I think a lot of people, like we live in a society where like we think that everything can be at our fingertips at any given point in time, but it's going to give us a lot more harm than good if we go to school, do all the things that we want to do right away just because we think the money is there and then regret it down the line. I think it's better to just be patient. So,
totally. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Anyway,
absolutely.
And I know you talked about insurance. I want to hit, like, I want to kind of reemphasize you said. So, with auto insurance, you tell it's like shop around, make sure you find the lowest, cheapest rates. You don't need to have like great coverage. You know, you don't need to have like the prestige, like Geico. You know, it's like they're all, it's all the same. I think just find the cheapest rate. And health insurance, Allie and I have been, since we had our baby recently, we've kind of been battling with health insurance and figuring that out. I would just kind of throw out a couple of tools. I want you to see if there's anything else you were thinking about, Connor. But if you're not on your parents' plan, you're under 26, the marketplace, so healthcare.gov is a great resource where you can enter in all your information and you can a lot of times find, you can get like a tax credit so you can get cheaper insurance. I worked for a company that did that for a while, so I kind of got familiar with that. And also your job, if your job has insurance. Those would be the two things I thought of. Was there anything else, Connor, you thought of as far as resources for people who need health insurance but are not on their parents' plan?
Yeah, those are the two main ones, especially healthcare.gov and finding a good broker too. They all get paid the same amount, so don't worry about them trying to sell you more.
Okay.
but the broker is really going to be a good resource because they'll be able to explain stuff.
How do you go about finding a broker? Yeah. Like, do you just Google it? Do you have to know somebody? You know, how do you find somebody?
I would look it up in your town. I'm also a broker.
Perfect.
But there's also resources on healthcare.gov where you can submit. I don't know the exact link, but you can submit. I want some help, basically, and they can give you a call.
Okay.
And help you. But the other thing I would say as well is a health share program. It's not my favorite type of insurance. And part of that is because I don't know a ton about it, but it's worth looking into. There's a place called Christian Healthcare, or Christian Health Share. And it works a little bit like an insurance company, but for some families, it's to their benefit. They end up paying a lot less. Deductibles could be smaller, that kind of thing. It's very helpful.
Mm, okay. Cool. So we kind of have this foundation of we found a job that we like that pays us well enough. We are now paying off our debt. If we don't have any debt, we're putting all that to emergency funding, to emergency savings. We have that. If we have that all covered, we, you know, we have our health insurance. Maybe we're still on our parents' plan, or we go into healthcare.gov, or our job gives us insurance. We have all these bases covered. At that point, what's our next step? Are we looking into investing, or what's kind of our next point from there for these couples?
Yeah. Investing is the next point. Yeah, you nailed it. That foundation. And then we build upon that with framework. And the framework is going to be investing. There's several different types of investing out there. You've got real estate, you've got investing in single individual stocks and bonds, and you've got mutual funds, ETFs, that kind of stuff. Am I missing anything else that maybe you guys have thought about or heard?
I think those are like the most common, like the easiest ones. You know, of course, there's like more advanced things you can get into, but I guess, Connor, just like we want to move into like the more personal section to learn about you a little more, but what's like your quick and easy tricks for some couples? Like if they really don't know anything about investing, they don't have that. What would you say is like the best place to start for them to start getting invested into the market and start making their money work for them, like you talked about earlier?
Yeah, good question. ETFs. And here's the reason why. Those are exchange traded funds. They work like a mutual fund. So it's pooled money together, investor pooled money and invested together. So you get small portions of, you know, things like Tesla and Amazon and Apple without having to pay the outrageous amounts of $3,000 for one share of Amazon, right?
Yeah.
Still participate in the growth. Reason is, lots of times when we want to start investing, we think, I want to buy some stocks. Well, where do I go to buy stocks? Maybe I'll go to Robinhood, but which stocks do I buy? Oh, that's expensive. I don't know. Well, coming up with a plan of why I am investing and how this money is going to affect me in the long term. Is it short-term money? Is it mid-term? Like, what is the goal of my money? I want to know what the goal of my money is. So understand why you're investing first. If it's for retirement, well, that becomes a different conversation. What kind of investments am I going to be using? And if it's for maybe in 5 years, I want to have a down payment on a house, but I want to get better interest then the bank is getting me. Well, then I go a little bit more conservative, that kind of stuff. So having a goal for your money and starting with exchange traded funds, a well-diversified portfolio that gives you consistent growth. You can ride out the bad times. Things aren't going to just crash and burn. Does that help answer the question?
Yeah, absolutely. Are you kind of more of the mindset of like a buy and hold kind of philosophy, or what are your thoughts?
Absolutely. Yeah, that works way better than really anything else. And you might see, I mean, we're forced to see gurus online telling us, you can make a Shopify thing on Amazon. And I haven't looked into that too much. Maybe that's great. But then you see these other guys invest in the stock market. I'll show you how to make these kinds of returns. Well, most of the time, the market doesn't have individual winners. It's not fair. The market's not exactly a fair place. It doesn't just give you automatic wins. And that's what a lot of times we as potential investors see from online gurus and maybe our friends that have made some money. But of course, go with those things first.
Yeah. Something I heard somebody say once that always stuck with me is with the market, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. So
it probably is.
And so I think a lot of times we think that we're going to be the one lucky person who somehow makes a ton of money when we invest in something risky. And usually it's not the case and it's not worth the risk. Mm-hmm. So
Right. And you hear a lot about crypto right now. And there's a place for crypto. But for every guy that's making a lot of money, there's another guy who loses his shirt. So there's risk in going at it individual.
Yeah. Well, one thing I want to kind of finish off with is, Warren Buffett is obviously like known as like the greatest investor of all time. And I remember that he had this competition with like this hedge fund. It was like a 10-year, you're probably familiar with it, where it was like, S&P 500, which is just the 500 like highest performing companies in the United States, so it's all into like one ETF or mutual fund, like Connor talked about, where you can buy a piece of all that, versus like the hedge fund where they're actively managing, actively selling and trading with like a 10-year period of time. Whoever like won, with the other person would donate like $1 million to charity or something like that. And Warren Buffett ended up winning just by only holding his money in the S&P 500 for 10 years versus a hedge fund, which is actively selling, buying, trading, you know, hedging, doing all these different technical advanced strategies, and they end up losing. So a lot of times, like if you don't really know what you're doing, buying into the S&P 500, you know, like an ETF, like VOO or SPY can be really great options to just like park your money and know that you're investing in like
the, it's not just sitting there.
Yeah. In the growth of the United States versus, you know, trying to like play the market and time it where you end up, you can end up losing a lot of money that way too. So that's just my little 2 cents.
Yeah.
No, in terms of specific investment places, if you don't know where to go, that's a great place to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. I think this is a good opportunity to transition a little bit into Connor, into your kind of personal experiences with marriage and finances and how everything has been going. But yeah, tell us a little bit about how things have been since you've been married, kind of some of your triumphs, some of your struggles.
Yeah.
How have things been for you?
Yeah, those are great questions. My wife and I are very similar in a lot of ways. And a lot of ways, obviously, we're different. And so there's definitely been some struggles. There's definitely been some great things. So one thing that comes to my mind quite often is we, for the most part, agree about money. We both agree that we'd like to live below our means. We both agree that we are frugal and are very cautious with our money, which is great. I would have a very hard time with someone who really liked to spend. But one thing that's been good for Kemily and I is that she is better at seeing money as a tool when we're spending. Mm. So on just leisure type stuff, on fun money and that kind of thing, she's very good at reminding me that we are able to do that. Sometimes without her, I think that I would have a pretty dull life in terms of spending. I will often not spend. It's a funny profession that I pick, of financial advising, that kind of thing. I deal with money every day, but money really stresses me out. And so she helps to relieve a little bit of that stress. She kind of talks me down, like, hey, it's okay. We planned for this. This is how much we got, and we've got X amount. It's going to be okay. Like, you can relax. You can enjoy this meal. You can enjoy this time, this little trip that we're on. Like, just enjoy yourself. So that she's really, really helped with that. I get too stressed about money. One thing that is tough for us, though, in contrast, that is actually talking about money, just because I am more tight than she is, and I'd like to save or put it somewhere else. She's, like I say, very good at helping us enjoy life responsibly, but it's difficult to talk about the budget at times, especially when we're tired. We get grumpy and we get kind of a little bit snappy with one another. So something I've learned is that we need to do it when we're in a good mood. Whenever you're in a good mood, maybe after Sunday, after church on Sunday, or maybe after Saturday morning, you're just in a good mood, whatever it is, that's when you talk about it. You know, that's when you go over finances. But that's definitely been a tough thing, is just to nail down the budget.
I have a question about that. How often are you guys chatting about your budget, and like, what does that kind of look like for you two?
Yeah, good question. So one thing that is important, that I feel is important, and what I've seen success with, is to, you don't need to be checking it every single day, but one thing neat about YNAB is that you assign your expenses right off the bat into different categories. So every day or every couple of days, I'm assigning the different expenses that I've incurred and putting them into different categories where, okay, well, I spent X amount into clothing or whatever, so that's minus that much, you know, that kind of thing. So we're not necessarily talking about it and communicating about it. We're doing our best to make sure we're keeping up to date. But once a week is what we aim for. Is end of week, we try to make sure, hey, anything big coming up, and what's going on? How did it go? Are we over? Okay, we're over on gas this month. We took a trip down to her parents' house. So now where does the gas money come from? Well, we can't spend a little bit more on eating out because we're taking money from eating out into the gas money, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of cool. We try to do it once a month, but try to keep up to date personally.
Yeah, that's awesome. Something I was going to say. So I liked how you talked about how you're both kind of savers, but she is able to spend a little bit of money without it stressing her out. I think with Nathan and I, that's been a funny dynamic for us, is that I'm definitely a spender. He's a saver. I happen to come from a family that's been, my mom's an accountant, and I've learned the value of saving your money. And
right.
So probably a similar dynamic to you, but I think for a lot of our listeners who maybe are engaged or dating someone and they're kind of trying to figure out if they're the right person for them, I would just to speak to that. I think it's important that there's at least one saver in every relationship, but sometimes it's okay that one of you is a spender, and that's a good thing. Like, I think I love that you kind of talked about how she helps you to like enjoy those trips and enjoy those meals and like those things that you normally maybe wouldn't spend money on, but you're kind of splurging because you've saved for a long time and you've kind of earned it. Mm-hmm. I think that's super, super important. And so for anyone listening that's kind of wondering, like, are we going to be screwed if like we're both spenders or whatever? I think it's important. I think you can make it work as long as like you're both willing to compromise and recognize like the value that the two of you bring to the relationship if there is a difference there.
That was some advice that I got before I got married. I was meeting with one of our like church leaders, and he was also a financial advisor, funny enough. And he was just saying that, like, in his experience when he was growing up, well, when he first got married, he was super stressed and super like kind of uptight about money, you know, kind of similar to Connor's story. But he said like that was his biggest like lesson, was that like this time when you're first like brand new married is such a fun time. Like, it's okay to enjoy. You don't have to like have every single like dollar is going towards like investing and going towards like growing your future. Like, that is so important. Yeah. That's something you should absolutely focus on, but don't like lose sight of like the moment of being together and like being a brand new couple and like having those experiences, still living in the moment and like being okay with spending an extra 15, 20 bucks going out to eat because your wife is having a tough day. Like, that is okay. And that's going to be like moments and experiences that you always remember versus
worth
like,
the money, for sure.
It's going to be worth the money, but like, obviously have the principles, but don't like, you know, it's okay to like be flexible and to like enjoy it as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's great advice. And it's advice that I need to take to heart a little bit more. And yeah, I think that every couple should maybe plan for a trip.
Yeah.
You don't have to do anything lavish if you don't like going traveling or whatever, but plan a little getaway, plan a big night of where you're really bougie or whatever, you know,
right.
Do that. It's just a plan. You make the plan and then
make the plan, save until you have the money set aside. Yeah. Make it very responsible. I love that.
Awesome. Well, this has been super awesome, Connor. I think this has just been like a perfect, if you are totally coming into like a marriage or like finances in general, just like having no clue, like this is the best place to start, just to know like where to get going. But I have two last questions for you, Connor. First one is like, what would be your advice? Like, if you give any advice to like a person or a couple who they're not married yet, or they're still single, or maybe they're just dating, or they haven't gotten married yet, what would you tell them is the most important thing for them to do right now? Like, what would you say is like the most important thing for them financially to set themselves up for success in the future, for them to start doing right now?
If they're dating, they're not married yet.
Maybe they're dating, maybe they're engaged, but maybe they're living at home right now, but they're not married yet.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think going back to just both Nathan, you and Al, both of your advice to figure out who is the saver and who is the spender, understand each other's habits a little bit more, and to kind of accept that, but have honest conversations with each other. Like, yeah, I'd really like to spend a little bit and I'm not a great saver, and try to make a plan while you're dating to do that. You know, if you're really serious about each other, to save yourself some heartache later, make some actionable goals now and understand who each other are in terms of how do I deal with money? What was my experience growing up with money? What do I think is a lot? What do I think is a little? That's because to kind of go back on an experience, Kemley and I, we will be talking sometimes and she's like, oh, it wasn't much, or I'll say it wasn't much or whatever. And that means totally different things to each other. So, understanding how you view money is so important. And the next thing I would say as well is don't worry too much about the money. Don't write somebody off because they have debt, or don't write somebody off because they might not be good with money. Money causes a lot of problems. Just try to do your best to help that person, to help each other get better at it. Because there's going to be money trouble forever. Like, no one's going to escape it. You're going to be uncomfortable at some point in your life, maybe throughout your entire life with money.
Yeah.
But figure out how to help each other and cope with that kind of thing. Yeah. I think that's probably what I would say.
I really, really love that. I would just say, from my experience as the spender in our relationship, I'm so grateful that Nathan didn't write me off, because I remember when we were dating, I was living at home, like all of my expenses were paid for, and I was working, and all of my, like literally 100% of my money went to fun things like clothes, what I didn't save anything. And I was so frivolous. And even when we first got married, it was like this huge adjustment. And I knew that it was going to be an adjustment, but it was still really hard. And I think it would have been very easy for Nathan to just write that off and be like, you know what? I can't do this. Like, I need somebody who values saving money. I need somebody who's just as frugal as I am. But I remember, and just going up based on what you said, like kind of the first comment you made about having those conversations, I think for me, the biggest like game changer for me was when Nathan said, we're not saving money just to throw, like put it in some like arbitrary bank account that we're never going to touch. Like, let's choose something we want to save for and put our money aside. So as the spender, I'm like, oh, we are going to spend this money just when we have enough, right? Yeah. We're going to spend the money on a house. And so then I started imagining like this cute house that I was going to decorate and all the things I was going to do maybe in 3 or 4 years when we have enough for that. And then I was motivated to save. And I feel like I've been able to change and I'm, you know, I'm still the spender, and I'm still going to always encourage Nathan to spend a little bit of money and like encourage him to find fun things to do with our money. But I've also learned to save. And so I just would say, as the spender, like, I appreciate that. And I think savers and spenders, like, we need each other, you know? And no, so it's always just like with anything in life, it's about finding that balance.
Yeah. And I'll add on to that. Allie and I remember how we had an experience when we were dating, when we went to Target and like I saw her like spend like over $100 on throw pillows. And I just remember being so like stressed out and like bothered by that. Like I was like, oh my gosh. But I think what Connor said was just so important, is that like, you're going to have financial troubles always. Like, if this is the person you love, like, don't let the money get in your way. Just confront those problems head on. The earlier, the better. Because if it doesn't matter if she's like
those perfect, throw pillows made me happy.
Yeah, you know, it doesn't matter if she's like the perfect like saver and I'm the perfect saver. Like, we're still gonna have financial troubles like in the future. Like, you might as well get through it at the very beginning than wait toward the end. So yeah, I think that's huge. But my last question for you, Connor: so what are things looking like for you right now? Are you taking new clients? Are you looking for new business? How do people get in touch with you if they want to work with you? What does that look like?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a misconception that maybe advisors aren't looking for new clients or whatnot. But yeah, at this point, I definitely am taking on new business and helping a lot of young couples, as well as some who are up there in age, I guess you could say. But there's a couple different ways. I have my email's great, Connor, Connor, at cookfinancialgroupaz.com. Kind of a mouthful. Or
we'll
just
put that in the show notes.
Yeah, we'll put a link.
Yeah. Phone number's great. Give me a call, shoot me a text, whatever. I respond, we'll get together and basically just have a good conversation about these same type of topics. And hey, what does that look like? Is there anything I can do to help? If not, hope this was good education. Yeah. That kind of thing.
And I think maybe another common misconception is people are like, oh, I'd like to work with a financial advisor, but I bet it's just so expensive. Like, what would you say to that person who's just like, I just don't think I can afford to work with a financial advisor?
Right. Yeah. Well, every time that we meet together, it's only $500 a time. I'm just kidding. No.
Yikes.
That is true for some advisors. But the way that we've chosen to run our business is we never charge for a meeting unless we feel like we're getting taken advantage of, then we might charge you. But we run our business off of free consults. And if we're able to work together on investments, there's small fees on investments, but you get to retain us for the rest of forever. Mm. We're there anytime you need us. For any kind of conversation, doesn't have to revolve around investing.
Wow.
Insurance companies will pay us to bring in that business. We broker for that, but we don't ever want you to have to worry about calling us like you do maybe the lawyer or something like that, where he's going to charge by the hour. Mm. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but we run.
Yeah. So not a bad deal at all. I mean, if you guys have questions or if you're kind of stressed about finances, maybe you're whatever stage you're at in life, like reach out to Connor. Like, he obviously has a ton of wisdom. Like, you could see how, you know, just even just like a fraction of it was kind of showed today, but he knows what he's talking about. And so he's a great resource. So even if you don't end up doing business together, he's still a great person to talk to and connect with to see if he can provide you some value in some other ways. So
I like how you said you work with all ages, because I think we have some listeners who are a little older, and I think it's never too late to get your finances on track.
Absolutely.
So just keep that in mind. So. Yeah.
There's no minimums to working with us, and there's no age requirements either. So
nice.
Awesome.
That's awesome. Well, Connor, any last thoughts, any last pieces of wisdom that you'd have for us before we end the show here?
I love what you guys are doing, and it's been a lot more fun than I thought it was going to be. And really, you guys have a lot of wisdom. I love the things. I feel like I gave some maybe long rambling thoughts, but you were able to really sum it up with your own wisdom, which I love. So,
that's
great. And I, you know, the only thing I would say is money is going to make somebody better or worse depending on who you already are. So if you're a good person, keep being a good person. Having more money is going to make you a better person. And really, financial planning your life is going to really give you a lot of peace and whatnot. But the thing that really makes the difference is in action. So actionable steps. That's the only thing I would say. It's just we make these plans, but actionable steps are the main thing that I would advise on. Just make sure you can do it.
Yeah.
Awesome.
But, so that's our invitation for you guys. Then decide one thing that you can do, like to improve your life financially, and start with that. Like whether
and
it's
do it.
Starting to save or creating a budget or having a financial conversation with your partner, just start with one thing and just let it snowball.
Absolutely.
Well, Connor, I just want to thank you. You've been so awesome. And yeah. I think you're very, very wise. Hopefully our listeners come to you and get some more awesome advice for their lives. But yeah, hopefully you guys all enjoyed this episode. I know I did. I know it's been inspiring to me and motivating to me to be a little bit better about our budgeting.
Yeah.
So thanks so much again for being willing to take some time out of your day to talk to us.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me. I loved it.
Thanks so much, Connor. We'll see you guys in 2 weeks.